Welcome to Two Dope Boys and a Podcast on Point. I'm Michael Brooks.
I'm Phil McKenzie.
And on Point, each week on this Thursday edition, you know, we like to identify something, somebody, some brand, some activist, some artist, somebody who's getting it right, and talk with a brilliant and dope guest. So joining us now for On Point is the most on point person that we've ever had on point. And that's for many reasons, because this person is incredibly talented, doing very interesting work in content and creative development at a grassroots and emerging level, which involves all of the things that we talk about on every episode of Two Dope Boys. And she's also my sister, which skyrockets her to the top of dopeness.
Pressure's on.
Yes, I'm sweating.
Most on-point guest you ever had. I'll say it again.
Maybe just that can be the last
one. Relentlessly dope. You're going to love this episode. My sister, Leisha Brooks. Joining the fellas.
What?
And I'm really excited, actually, that she's meeting Phil.
I know. I feel like
this is important.
I feel like this is like a little mini family reunion, you know?
Exactly.
Like, you know, no bullshit. Like, Michael's like a brother to me, you know? Yeah. So it's like, now you're like my sister.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, that's how I feel.
Sister in dopeness.
All right.
Sister.
Brother in dope.
Yeah.
Nope. No added pressure, but come on, sis. Bring it.
All right. Wow.
Yeah, it's okay. Not just for me.
Yeah.
And super producer Matt Leck is like a cousin who's close to us. So and Charmaine's an intern. And everybody has to know this now. We have a brilliant and talented young woman who is going to be hanging out with us this summer and doing a lot of the things to explore and make Two Dope Boys happen. And maybe if you want to come on mic and say hi now, you can. If you want to wait, I don't want to put the pressure. Yeah, well, a little louder.
We're going to have to get, her volume is going to increase as we continue her to volume, do this. So yeah. We're going to give this one more shot.
Okay. What up? I'm Charmaine. I don't know.
What up? I'm Charmaine. I don't know. I love it. Actually, I'm very excited to have you with us this summer.
Yes, we have to seriously, like, you know, we all laugh and joke, but you know, we're really happy to have Charmaine with us. And Michael's expressed that. I'm going to express that as well. And you know, it's going to be a great summer working with her and building with her to kind of continue the Two Dope Boys brand. So welcome,
Charmaine. Thank you, Leisha. Why don't you start by, and I'll just leave the studio for this because I already know all of this.
Right,
but why don't you start for the audience? Exhausting, actually. I can't take it anymore. But start by telling the Two Dope Boys audience and Dopeverse just a little bit about who you are, where you're coming from, what you're doing.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm Michael's sister and now Phil's dopeness sister.
Yes.
Michael and I grew up in Western Massachusetts. So we come from like a pretty specific niche background of, I'd say, pretty idealistic people, a lot of focus on the environment and feminism. And then I moved out to Los Angeles, a little less focus on both, but,
not necessarily our family, immediate family with some of that stuff.
No.
But like our scene, like the waters we were swimming in.
Right.
Yeah.
No, just to be clear, we're horrible with the environment, very misogynist.
We don't recycle.
Personal family. I
totally
wasn't trying
don't,
to yeah, mix
yeah,
with
stop
that.
Stop throwing us under the bus.
Sorry. Yeah. No. I'm a theater background from high school and college. And then my writing partner and I, who I went to high school with, we've been now developing film. And so I've become a filmmaker in LA, and we now are working on a series called Beards.
Before we get to that really quick, will you talk about the first...
I'm in the middle of my monologue?
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna improve your monologue.
Okay.
You and Dan Robert, who is your writing partner, who is actually like a brother to me, speaking of all of these sort of familial things. You wrote Mayflower Plantation, which is a really funny play that in your last year of high school, which went on to become professionally produced. So would you talk about that
Mayflower?
A little bit? Yeah,
sure.
Mayflower, and then how that kind of led into Beards and everything else.
Yeah, I think Mayflower was, I'm glad you brought that up. Mayflower was
hysterical.
Our first full play we wrote together, and it was about historical reenactment. You know, I don't know where all of you grew up, but where we grew up, there's like Plymouth Plantation. It's kind of like a hokey little village, and everyone's dressed up like ye old days. And a lot of what the actors or reenactors said at the time, like, I guess it was historically accurate, but it was like really offensive. And then like there was they have a Native American section, but like they weren't really reenactors. They were like Native Americans that were like there to show their heritage, but it seemed like things weren't really worked out well with communication with the management and those people. And I remember someone asked about a sweat lodge, and one of the Native people got really offended. Mm-hmm. But and it's so dark. But we wrote a play and about a historical reenactment site that was like totally bogus and like had a really right-wing Christian agenda, and it was like the front to like it was a drug business front, and it was site specific, so we were outside and we had cars and chickens and someone burned a Harry Potter book. It was really fun.
It was all populated by like very eccentric people who are reenactors,
right,
including one guy who was like a failed actor who kept saying that he had, what was it, like Tom Hanks' cousin's friends.
Well, he said he had a direct line to Tom on a speed dial, and then mm-hmm. later you find out it was his, like, Tom's cousin's ex-wife's roommate from college. You know, it's like very convoluted, sad little people.
Very that, Hollywood.
Yeah, hadn't really made it in their lives. But the kind of cool moment we had with that show was we had a scene, and there was a little boy. The high school we went to had people from 80 different towns and cities, so it was a really diverse student body. And our friend's dad or grandfather was kind of this racist guy that we knew who was at the play. And then our friend's little brother, who was like a little Hispanic boy, was sitting, and they both laughed at the same joke. And that was, I think, the most, like, not to sound like, oh, so much, but it really was a really cool moment, because mm-hmm. you're like, oh, these people have such different perspectives, and society treats these people so differently, and they're both laughing at how hypocritical this person is being on stage and how absurd this is. So that's kind of, in our work, you know, we never want to be on the nose with it, but if we ever can make those moments happen, that's what we're gunning for.
Totally.
So
now you're in L.A.,
Living in LA. Just writing pilots and losing weight.
I need to be on this diet.
Yeah. Yeah. You know that every screenplay that's written in a cafe gets made.
I've heard
Yeah,
that.
Statistically. So it's a great environment.
LA living.
LA, yeah. I don't know.
I actually have to plug like LA. It out there. I think it's having a moment. There's actually a lot of cool stuff happening. It's
I like In-N-Out Burger.
In-N-Out is there. I think at one point it was known for like gangs and plastic surgery, and now it's kind of getting known for cool art and a little more progressive thinking. So it's a good time to move out there. You should come take advantage before it burns.
As a native New Yorker, I've always had like a
anti-LA thing. Yeah,
disdain
totally.
For LA.
Yeah.
But it's softened. Like, I, you know, because I'm a New Yorker, so I've realized like, I don't, who gives a fuck? Like, it's New York. Like, it's the capital of everything.
Yeah.
So I don't need to really battle with other cities. But it's cute. L.A., you know.
You can't. You know, well, very dismissive, dear. No, it's.
That's what we do in Brooklyn. We dismiss them.
Right, yeah. Yes. Rude. You can't really compare them. It's sort of stupid.
Yeah,
it's like
it
this,
is.
You know, arbitrary thing that everyone's come up with. But I think because it's not as expensive, a lot of artists can go out there and actually do art, not even if they just have a trust fund, which oftentimes is a frustration in this city. Not that you can't get around it. There's a lot of brilliant artists here that figure it out, but it's a little more obstacle ridden.
Tell us about Beards.
Beards. Okay. Beards is what we've been working on now. It's a series. If you want to go check it out, it's at beardseries.com, and it's on Hello Giggles as well. And it's about different couples, and Dan, who we've mentioned now 3 or 4 times.
Shout out Dan.
Shout
What's
out
up, Dan?
To Dan.
I
How
know
you doing?
Dan will be listening.
And is it Dan Robert?
Dan
Two
Robert.
First names, Dan Robert. Okay. He's well. I think his anxiety has meddled out today, and he's doing good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dan, I don't know Dan. You, Dan, but all of a sudden I'm a concern.
Yeah.
No, he's great.
Dan is actually a listener.
He's a listener.
To the Dope Boys Experience.
Shout out to Dan.
And we've been writing together for about 10 years now.
Okay.
So he and I wrote this series, and it's about like different married couples. So we always use this example, or I do. Constance Wilde was Oscar Wilde's beard. So if one of you is hiding your sexuality from society and you marry someone, or like Katie Holmes was Tom Cruise's beard. Or like,
oh, is that confirmed?
I don't want to have science. Right, before Scientology gets sick.
Oh
on
God!
Our
but just don't even know.
But just as a Tom Cruise fan, clear.
No,
I felt something there. Like, I'm kind of giving you the quasi side eye, sister in dopeness.
I think that it's, you know, if you are a true Tom Cruise fan. And if he can't be openly out, because that's how he makes his money.
See, now you're calling me out. Now you're making
really
me uncomfortable with my liberalism.
If you're not embracing his speculated sexuality, that...
There's one lone tear coming down like, that like no one can see, but I feel very deeply.
It's like that ad from the 70s.
It is.
The Native American pollution ad. That's what you need to feel.
The one lone tear. Oh, my God.
Okay, so now Scientology.
Complicated waters.
Scientology, please leave us alone.
I'm so scared.
We really don't know.
They're really, really sick.
I actually,
sick.
What was so weird is one time I was in a Whole Foods in Midtown for a minute, a couple years ago, right around when that whole thing was blowing up.
And then you woke up in khakis and a blue shirt and you were scrubbing a bathtub. The orcs wear
no,
that uniform.
No, I got the Scientology.
They're not called
joke.
Orcs.
I was like, you couldn't even give me that. Tom Cruise abducted me. All of a sudden I was in the org. That sounds really low level.
Well, you start
I saw,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
You start there.
No, I saw Katie Holmes and her baby, and it was like, whoa. It was very weird.
I was hoping this was going to be a Christy Alley story.
I don't even know who Christy Alley really is. Tell us about Beers.
I don't think anyone.
Oh, wait, she's
from Cheers.
Oh, from Cheers. I haven't watched Cheers, man.
And also Fat Actress.
The what?
For the younger.
I haven't watched Cheers, dude.
You didn't watch Cheers?
We grew up without a TV. Okay.
In our sexist,
we grew up in a
polluting
demented,
household.
Insane environment.
Yo,
we didn't have
Cheers
television.
Is arguably one of the best sitcoms ever.
So you know what's weird is that we, and then you got to
so
tell us
Beards.
About Beards. But we didn't get to, yeah, Beards is an amazing sitcom. Our parents like were very low, like very anti-TV.
Very low what?
Like very low is the wrong phrase.
Low
energy people. They're very low.
They were very lethargic.
They're very lethargic, and But then on the flip side, they had no like nonsense about like, oh well, you can't watch profanity. So it would be like you can watch an hour of TV a week, but then it could be like Eddie Murphy. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, I'll take my hour to watch Raw. Instead
like,
of like a random sitcom, you know?
Like I remember I wanted to see Under the Tuscan Sun and mom made me watch Malcolm X
with
instead.
Diane Lane?
Yeah. She didn't like that movie because Diane Lane has like a one night stand and then ends up like getting with this guy and they live happily ever after in Tuscany.
And
she just
thought,
she thought
she
it was just like
you
the
watch
most,
Malcolm X.
She thought
that
it was Malcolm
like
X
her mother.
Had more
a little more social realism in the Brooks household.
She was like Under the Tuscan Sun. What kind of propaganda is that?
Yeah.
Like, what are the taxes like on this villa?
You need to understand
like,
your
she
history.
She would have gotten STD,
yeah.
He would have left.
Right. She would have gotten chlamydia. Anyways, that's done. All right, you're going to watch Malcolm X, young lady. Okay, so
this rock didn't land on me.
Exactly.
Yeah, see, and I don't know any quotes from Under the Tuscan Sun. So
there you go.
At me.
Spike Lee, shout out Brooklyn, Malcolm X. There you go.
Yeah.
It all loops back. So Beards.
Beards, okay.
So we know what a beard is.
We got what a beard is. So Dan and I write these very dark comedy, you know, worlds where he or I are in the closet in our marriage and then the other one plays their beard. And some of them, we have a 1940s Hollywood couple. Mm-hmm. And so the, I'm blanking, the agency, the studio, has arranged their marriage, and so that one's kind of orchestrated, and she is a black boyfriend, and he is a gay lover, and that kind of blows up. And then we have a contemporary hippie couple, and the guy just was from a really, like, normal, sports-loving family, and he just, like, thinks he's discovered meditation and, like, organic food, and that's what was wrong with him. And then he starts studying for an NPR moth story contest, and he falls in love with his moth storytelling coach. And then we have one where they're like a 1970s couple and they're like just are really addicted to like coke and partying. And she's just like way too much of an addict to realize that she's fully a lesbian. And she ends up making out with her grandmother's caretaker nurse at a like 80th birthday party. And that's kind of like a little, you know, we just kind of drop into these worlds at these big moments. And yeah, we're developing a bunch more. But it's really fun because we can just go to any time period and touch on any social issue just through this really dark comedic lens.
I love it. Yeah, they're really
fun.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's not fun. It's very stressful. No, I hate when people say it's fun. It's great.
No, like, it's great.
But that's interesting. Like the process. Like viewers, you know, we might think it's like fun and like it's interesting and it's funny. But like for you as a creator, like what's that like to kind of make these kind of uncomfortable things maybe come to life in a way that can be fun to someone like myself who's kind of watching it?
No, it's really fun. It just very, when you're making film on a micro budget and you're doing it at that, it's just, there's so many variables and we're very ambitious. We want to do time periods and we want to be on, you know, interesting locations. And so it's, you know, we produce, we create, we write. He and I are now directing some of the earlier episodes we had brilliant directors work on, but we've kind of have taken on every part of the machine for the most part. And so there's just, you divide your brain into so many pieces when you're producing and in pre-production. And then when you're on set, you really want to drop into these characters and not be like, okay, are people eating? Like, is there a dog in this house that we can't let out? You know, whatever the little minutia is of what's going on. So it's, I don't know. It's like you're so fully in that experience, like when you're on set, that the outside world is no longer, is at all, you know, present. And then you wrap and you edit for like ever, and then you put it up, and then people have their reaction. So it's very stilted coming from a theater background because it's such a, you know, disconjointed process from making it to seeing how it lands or doesn't land or whatever.
The thing is, I'm curious about, we were actually talking, we had on Malik Yorba, we were talking with him about a number of things, but including his acting experience, and he was talking about coming up in an industry where there was a lot of silos, like, okay, you're an actor, so what do you have to, you know, like, why would we talk to you about the marketing campaign to get this show out? And it just seems to me what's interesting about your process, and because I'm watching you and put all of this together, and I know that, you know, you obviously do commercials sometimes and have agent and all the rest, but you're coming into the process from the beginning, like, instead of maybe the old system seemed like, be an actor, get successful enough, and then they'll give you the ability to direct or make your own. Out of the gate, you're coming in as a writer, director, and actor, and I know it's just partially a reflection of your own talents, but is that also, and what you want to do. So why don't you talk about that? But is that also like the new setup of how people can break into this industry, that you have to come in sort of like with skill sets across the board?
Yeah, I think that the digital space has really changed what it used to be. I think it used to be far more an environment where you had to, you know, hand out your headshot and knock on doors and play Dead Blonde Girl 13 and, you know, whatever.
Dead Blonde Girl 13.
I know, that it's a role like I've always wanted.
Jesus.
You know,
or like first black guy killed.
Right,
like, wait, don't go in there, Phil.
Girl on cleavage with date, you know, just like, or like, you know, Dan... he's gay and he wants to be able to play straight characters as well as gay characters. There's like, you know, Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, no one else. I was about to say, he has that on lock.
Yeah. Everyone else, it's like,
just
hey,
gave him permission.
We have a movie with a gay character. Like, who's the straightest actor we know? And then we're not going to go back to Tom Cruise. I'm going to upset you. But, you know, there's like this really big double standard with, you know, the parts gay men and women can usually get. But the end game for Dan and I isn't like, oh, we're going to like develop all these skills, make these films so that we can just be actors. Like, it's
right.
Some people do, like, make a web series, start doing stand-up. Like, there are people that develop these skills in the hopes of just landing a sitcom and then, you know, drop it. And that, I think, has created some tension, especially in spaces like stand-up, because now you know, everyone does stand up. And that's, you know, in LA and New York, that's like a very common thing. And that used to be unusual to a degree. Like you meet someone, you're like, oh, wow, you do stand up. And now it's kind of like, you know, part of the actress, stand up, waiter, blah, blah, you know, whatever the like credits are.
Right.
But what was the original question?
No, I think that was basically it. It was kind of like what the relationship between your own like career desires and your talents and also the changing nature of how you create a career for yourself doing work in the entertainment industry.
Well, you have this huge advantage, so you should take it, you know, advantages of it any way you can, regardless of it's just to act or do other things. I mean, you guys are doing the same thing in every industry.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're intelligent guys. You met through a friend. You had these conversations. You're like, oh, more people should chime into this to make this podcast.
Right.
It's essentially, it's just an expedited marketplace now.
It definitely is a function of being nimble. Like, you have to.
Let me just do a little tap dance.
Kind of, yeah. Be true to yourself. Yep. Get a little Bojangles on with a tap dancing reference.
Not going to get Bojangles.
A little Savion Glover.
Not level.
Yeah, you know, I can't do any of that.
Yeah,
have basic rhythm, but basic black man rhythm, but that's about it.
You consider yourself lucky because my clapping can be a little questionable. And I didn't want to admit that because I think things were going very well with us until then.
There you go.
Then I dropped my... By the way, that's Michael clapping,
perfectly
not me.
Perfectly timed.
But, can you do the... What is it?
Like, yeah. The hesitant clap.
People could see right now, I look like I have rickets.
It's really, really... Like, if there's a video of Michael, it would not look good for his brand.
Oh, how dare you.
No.
How dare you.
I have to disagree with that, sister in dopeness.
All right, I stand corrected.
Yeah.
You must be wearing orthotics,
you think
girl.
You think that was on brand for you?
Of course.
Oh, that was on brand because that was funny.
Yeah,
all right, absolutely. All right. Yeah,
it's all about who you are.
Can we just cut all that out?
Keep all that. Shit.
Cut. No. Time out.
Do you actually miss that? Like doing
set say time out.
No, but I was thinking because there are a lot of parallels between what we do in some ways. But I do a lot of the Majority Report is live every day. This is edited and it's a different thing, but it's still pretty fast.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah. You know. And let me tell you, if you've been listening to this show and you didn't realize it was edited, I'm both flattered and a little disturbed. But going back to like theater, do you miss that kind of like fast turnaround of like the immediate response of like doing something and having people see it? Like, because we were in Massachusetts over the weekend and we did a great, you put together this amazing showing with Dan and a bunch of people came out and watched Beards and that was awesome. So you had some of that, but do you miss that generally?
Yeah, I mean, the energy like right here in the room, like I'll probably leave and like have like a high and like some door, you know, it's like, and you have that when you rap, it's like, okay, I did that and it's like a thing, but yeah, you don't have that, the energy is different. I don't know, it's, when you're really cooking with people and it's on camera, you still get that to a degree, but there's nothing like being in a, you know, packed theater or performance space and when you're really on connecting. That just never, I don't think anything. Did you ever do stand-up?
No.
You're like really nodding. I'm like, oh it feels like.
No, because my relationship with stand-up is through like Richard Pryor,
right.
Like Eddie Murphy, people like that. Yeah. And I have a great appreciation for comedy. Like me and Mike have talked about this. And I've always felt like being a stand-up is the hardest thing you can do. Because unlike most things, when you go to see comedy, people are skeptical. Like I think when you walk into most like kind of performance environments, people kind of give you the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
Except for stand-up, where they're like, you know, make me laugh, motherfucker. And maybe that's like a very like, like they're very like, you know, no one saw that, but there was like the screw face. Like, right, kind of people give you the side eye, like, okay, make me laugh. And so they're daring you to like amuse you, you know? Yeah. So I have a lot of respect for that world. So when you're talking about that and how that parallels to the work you do on stage or like building like a platform like Beards, I can relate to it emotionally. Because, like I said, I feel like it's like what you do. An artist like you, I really respect it as someone who's not been on the front line of performance like that.
So we can get over the clapping and Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay, okay. Yeah, we're all good.
Yeah, everybody's good.
No, that she, was a bit.
That was her bit.
It's a live performance piece.
My last right thing, my comedians complain. The other thing comedians complain about all the time is
their depression.
Well, they're always bitching about something. Yeah. No, but they think this, like, these. And partially it's understandable, but it's like if you go and you see a dance performance or a musician or something, you have like, there's this like innate understanding that like, all right, I can't, you know, can't do what Beyonce does, yeah, right? Or something like that.
I mean, I think everyone in the world has that understanding. No,
that's what I'm saying. But there's a lot of people, yeah, but a lot of people don't, but I'm saying a lot of people don't understand, even with the funniest comedians, they still from a certain amateur point of view can actually be like, oh, I'm funny. You know, everybody in my office says I'm funny. They actually don't see like the structure and the work to be. I mean, we don't have to go, you know, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, Louis C.K., Bill Burr. We can go to just like, I don't want to actually throw out any names now as I use this example, but just, you know, not the best, but not the worst, solid workman-like comedian. That still takes incredible organization and structure to
point,
put that
like
together.
With music, one thing I'll add is like, you're not, like if you go to see any artist, it doesn't matter whether they're like a big artist or like a indie artist that you really dig. If you went to go see them, you like a song, you like some, there's something that you're waiting for that moment where they're going to play the hit you know or the song you dig. Comedy isn't like that. Like,
you hear the joke twice, you're like,
yeah,
oh,
like I'm not going to go. If Eddie Murphy was to do comedy today, he's not doing like the sketches he did 20 years ago. Like, I'm not waiting for the greatest hits of Eddie Murphy. But if you go see Beyonce, you're going to get like, even if you don't like her current stuff, you're going to get Single Girls.
Right.
You know, or Single Lady. You're going to get like whatever the cut is that you dig somewhere in that. But comedy isn't like that. Like, they're constantly in this space of reinvention. You know, and I think that's what makes it unique. You know, like you're not walking in expecting to hear like Eddie Murphy do like shit he did. Like maybe Richard Pryor with Mudbone, you might get like a story in Mudbone voice.
But it would
voice.
Be a riff.
Yeah, but it's going to be something different. Yeah. You know, as Mudbone.
It has to evolve or it's done.
Yeah, definitely.
And Eddie actually couldn't really do a lot of the stand-up.
I know, it's so politically incorrect.
No doubt.
That would be, it's a whole other
world. I was like thinking of things to quote and everything that came to mind, I was like, oh, can't say that. Like, yep. I was like, oh,
yeah,
that.
Literally, me too.
I'm not going to lie, the Honeymooners thing is still really funny.
Fuck it.
Well,
you
look,
you watch me, Norton. And I know that you know that I know.
Oh my god, I weren't watching TV, we were just listening to Eddie Murphy tapes and Jerky Boys.
Yeah, shout out to Eddie Murphy.
Shout out to Eddie. We gotta get him on Dope Boy sometime. Leisha, what's next?
For me or for the world or
whatever you want to take on.
For the world, it's the sunrise.
Yeah, I guess so.
Hopefully.
The sun will, hopefully.
But for you.
For me, I think we're gonna start working on a feature and we're working on selling some shows. So just trying to make things that are funny and hopefully give people some pause to think in a not aggressive, boring way.
Awesome. Anything with Mayflower Plantation or anything like that again? Is that coming back?
Yeah, we have kind of structured that into a pilot or a feature, depending.
Well, Leisha Brooks.
Michael Brooks.
Obviously my favorite On Point guest.
Sister in Dopeness.
Sister in Dopeness. I'm so glad you're here.
I really like the ring of Brothers in Dope. I know it's a little controversial, but I'm into it.
You really like what?
Brothers in Dope.
That's not controversial.
That's not controversial. No, we'd be slanging.
Okay, yeah, all
no
right.
No controversy whatsoever.
We're slanging that good yayo
all
on right, them streets.
Cool. All right.
I'm hyped
that's
up.
That's what this show is.
Ali Boumaye.
All right. See you all next Tuesday. Thanks, everybody.
Peace.